Hello and welcome to this podcast from the BBC World Service. Please let us know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
The sheds are carpeted in birds. You see birds where their legs are buckling underneath them, and I find it just so...
These are chickens that have been selectively bred to grow as big as possible, as quick as possible, using as little feed as possible.
There's a lot to be said for it in a sustainability argument. These birds are hugely efficient in how much weight they put on, which then turns off...
I know there's an image of a chicken farmer going in there and kicking his chicken around the sheds and all, but they're not. I mean, at the end of the day, high welfare...
One of the ways I really like to think about welfare is to ask myself, how willing would I be to take on the life that that animal is living? And for me, I wouldn't be so keen, to be honest, to live the life of a broiler chicken.
From BBC Radio 4, this is Fed, with me, Chris Van Tulleken, investigating why we eat what we eat. And at what cost? I'm generally someone who likes to think he knows a lot about food. But whilst I understand what happens once food passes our lips, when it comes to the question of how it arrives there, I'm less sure. I want to unravel the tangled story of people and power behind the world's most popular meat. This is Fed, Planet Chicken. Welcome to episode 3. You okay, hen? I'm going to find out what it takes to make a chicken happy and whether that's even an option for the billions of birds we eat every year. What about those birds? I want to understand whether meat chickens can have a happy life, if all these birds are bothered by how they're typically treated. And come to think of it, are we? I spend a lot of time thinking about what makes chickens happy now, because I've got my own birds. There are 5 3-week-old chicks bouncing around what used to be my study, which they've now taken over. They're crapping everywhere, they're digging in the corners of our wool carpet for moth larvae. They're almost ready to head outdoors, which I'm pretty happy about because I want my study back. And I think they'll be happy too, but I am making some assumptions. Are they actually going to prefer life outside? And can chickens even feel happy?
Siobhan?
Hi, Chris.
Great to see you. Come on in.
Thank you. Thanks.
I'm so pleased you're
Professor
here.
Siobhan Mullen has done a lot of research into chicken welfare. She once spent an entire day living like a chicken for a research project. She followed one bird, scratching around in the hutch and sleeping and eating whenever it did.
I'm so excited to see the chicks.
Well, but this is a bit like having, you know, social services come round first home visits when you're a new parent.
She's moved on from chicken life and she is now a professor of veterinary medicine at University College Dublin. And she's come to see how I'm getting on.
They're starting to really come into their own as chicks now, aren't they? They're really starting to look around, being interested in the world and so on. That's what they should be doing.
Okay, I'm pleased. What are my odds of toilet training them?
Actually, I would think it's probably is possible, because one of the things we often do with students is an exercise clicker training chickens. And there's even research that shows that before they do the training of them, even vet or agricultural students or something don't particularly rate the sort of intelligence of chickens and their emotional abilities and so on. But after they spend only a couple of hours clicker training them and find that actually you can train them, you know, really easily in that amount of time to do small tasks, then their sort of estimation of chickens goes up.
Ooh, off they go.
Initially, you think they're stupid and you don't imagine they could be bored. And I think the last few days I'm like, oh, I think they might be bored when I'm at work. And they were certainly very excited to get out and run around.
And that's a classic sign as well, that often when animals have been in a somewhat restrictive environment, you get this rebound effect where they're kind of overactive then. It's almost like they're children at break time, you know. And we even use that as a measure to determine welfare and so on.
So my chicks are clever, and quite possibly they're a bit bored. I'd not even thought about them having interests and enthusiasms that I'm not letting them express.
They like exploring places that they can get up and hop down, so they like to perch.
In the kitchen, they spend a lot of time running around in the kitchen, and they try and get high.
Yes.
You know, there's a little step they get up on, or they'll get on a knee.
all of these things are kind of hardwired into them. Even though we've changed how they physically look and how fast they grow and so on, we actually haven't undone the sort of jungle foulness out of them in terms of their behaviour and their interests.
Can I show you the garden?
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm very keen that these chickens have a happy life here, especially if we're going to eat them.
Yeah.
So can I show you what
yes,
my plan
definitely.
Is?
Definitely.
I feel like being outside is going to give them a nicer life, or at least a life that will allow them to be chickens. Of course, I now know that's not how most meat birds live.
More than 90% of our birds are just the standard fast-growing birds in sheds. We've got 5% or a bit more that might be free-range or enhanced welfare, and then just a very small proportion would be organic.
OK, so in your informal private opinion, but also you're an expert, like how bad is the worst chicken rearing we do?
One of the ways I really like to think about welfare is to ask myself, how willing would I be to take on the life that that animal is living? And for me, I wouldn't be so keen, to be honest, to live the life of a broiler chicken. You start to take me free range, reduce my growth rate so that I've got less chance of disease, more chance to be able to be active and more like a chicken, then I'm starting to feel a bit better about it.
It's worth thinking about. If you were a chicken, what type of chicken would you want to be? We are giving life to a huge number of birds that otherwise wouldn't exist. But is it a life worth living? The vast majority of the chicken we eat never goes outside. Of course, we have welfare laws regulating how they're kept, but are they good enough?
I do have my dog with me, and he is chewing something in the background.
Christine Nicol is a professor of animal welfare at the Royal Veterinary College in London. Her dog is called Pogus.
I hope he doesn't distract everyone too much.
My concern for my chicken's welfare is partly because I've become genuinely fond of them, and partly because caring for my future dinner is making me give this much more thought than when I buy chicken in a shop. What does make a chicken happy?
So vets and animal scientists have always had a focus on physical health, but there's more to it than that.
People like Christine, who study animal behaviour, are interested in what chickens can't do in commercial farming systems that they might want to do. It's that idea of naturalness that appeals to so many of us when we're thinking about our food.
So the birds are able to make their own decisions about things, choose where to be, choose who to be with, choose what temperature to be in. That in itself is something that aligns quite well with indicators of welfare.
Keeping all that in mind, what are the big welfare problems for modern chickens?
The fact that the birds are very big, they grow very fast, isn't guaranteed to cause health problems, but it does seem to be associated with some health issues. The one that's gained the most attention really would be problems with walking that some birds have.
Another is when birds are left to sit around in their own muck.
And that can cause skin problems for the birds.
And although chickens in some systems have enrichment, things like hay bales to perch on and hanging things to play with, that's not the case for all indoor birds.
So their ability to do these normal behaviours like dust bathing or roosting at night may be restricted to some extent.
To be fulfilled as chickens, they need some freedom and autonomy. I still don't know what to make of the modern broiler system.
There's a lot to be said for it in a sense of a sort of sustainability argument. These birds are hugely efficient in what they eat and then how much weight they put on, which then turns obviously into meat for humans. What we really need, I think, is to focus more on the actual welfare problems themselves, because leg disorders can be caused by a lot of other things, not just growth rate. And the industry, to be fair to them, have done a lot in recent years to reduce infectious causes of leg problems, for example, by hugely improving biosecurity. The things that really matter are the leg health and the litter quality and the ventilation. And if those can be controlled, then slightly higher stocking densities or slightly faster growing breeds can be kept in good welfare.
That makes sense to me. At Charles Bournes's farm, I didn't see any of these issues. Although whether they were able to express what Siobhan called their jungle foulness was less clear. So I'm still feeling a bit confused. But some people aren't confused at all.
The industry is rife with welfare problems because it's based on getting an animal to slaughter weight in an incredibly fast amount of time.
Juliette Galatly is the founder and director of vegan campaigning charity Viva.
Literally, you've got these great big fat legs, which are completely abnormal, that they've been selectively bred to have, and these huge breasts for the breast meat, and they have fragile bones. It's a very brutal industry.
There's obviously not much space for compromise between livestock farmers and vegan groups. And on social media, you'll find a whole mess of claims and counterclaims. Like everyone else, I find it hard to figure out what's really going on when there are such polarised accounts of farm animal welfare.
1 billion chickens are slaughtered every year in the UK. Viva investigated the three biggest killers.
Viva's among the campaign groups who conduct their own investigations into allegations of animal abuse, and they regularly publish video exposés online. These videos paint a grim picture, showing chickens with skin problems, issues walking, even dead bird carcasses lying in sheds with the live ones. But how much is this happening? In the past, farmers have suggested that with the exception of the odd bad apple, many of these kinds of videos are staged or faked in some way. And this is an allegation that Juliette strongly refutes, at least in relation to Viva's videos. Farmers also say it wouldn't make business sense to mistreat their own livestock, their livelihoods. Juliette disagrees.
I hear this from every aspect of factory farms, that they would go out of business if they weren't nice to the animals. And everything that we film and investigate time and time again is definitely not what anybody would label as being nice to the animals. The cruelty is just there. If you intensively farm thousands of animals, in the case of broiler chicken farms, you have tens of thousands of animals in just one shed, you know, you're going to find a lot of neglect and cruelty. So no, I refute those allegations completely. I would say that they are just lying.
We put Juliette's comments to the National Farmers Union. Their poultry board chair, James Mottershead, told us that he cares about the birds he produces and that bird health and welfare is a chicken farmer's number one priority. He said that how farmers look after their birds is what determines good health and welfare, not the number of birds they keep or the production system they're kept in. As I've said before, I've not witnessed anything illegal on any chicken farm I visited. But as I'm increasingly reminded, I'm out of my comfort zone here. I've seen one end of the welfare scale, the intensively reared indoor chickens. But at the other end, Siobhan mentioned organic, which, to be honest, I'd always thought was more about chemicals rather than welfare. But since I'm running my own mini broiler operation, I do want to learn. So let's see how the other half, or in fact the other 1% of chickens, actually live.
We farm 3,000 acres organically on the Staffordshire-Derbyshire border. Sheep, cattle,
this is Dalesford. It's organic, aspirational and not cheap. I've come to their Staffordshire farm, which is home to their chicken operation. It's a totally integrated system from hatching chicks right through to on-site slaughter. But what exactly does organic mean? And is it worth it for the chicken or for us?
We've got 85 acres or thereabout where we grow around 5,000 chickens every week.
John Reed is the manager and he oversees their cattle, sheep, deer and chickens. He's a farmer through and through, constantly watching the sky where there's a big bank of grey rain clouds gathering. I want to know what it means to be organic from a welfare point of view.
It's actually a legal definition. We're certified by the Soil Association and as such we're inspected annually. The biggest differences are that the birds have got access to outdoors. Food's organically certified, so there's no chemicals used in the extraction of protein and that sort of thing.
I think for me, I'd always understood that it just meant you don't give the birds lots of antibiotics.
It's an all-encompassing term, actually. It includes everything from the feed to how we rear the birds and the age that we kill them and things like that.
So you couldn't intensively indoor rear organic chicken?
We couldn't disguise an intensive bird as an organic bird, no.
At this point, John and I reach the sheds, where the chicks are kept for 6 weeks until they're hardy enough to live outdoors.
And these are hubbards?
Yeah.
Oh!
They're only small.
Clearly these chicks are safe and warm and well-fed, but at the moment, it looks a lot like an intensive setup.
Can we go and see them outside?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
As we make our way to the fields, I discover that John's previously worked in intensive poultry farms as well, so he understands the range of systems. I wonder how they compare.
I guess over the last 60, 70 years, chicken production has got more and more intensive, more efficient, and therefore cheaper, and it's been a great protein source for a lot of people. Has it gone too far? We don't know, but we're producing something else.
There's very little organic chicken available in the UK. It's less than 1% of the chicken we buy. Why is that?
I think it's cost, and that's just a fact of life. What we do costs more money.
These chickens spend half their life indoors, but when we reach the fields, it's exactly the sort of thing you're probably picturing when you think of happy chickens.
They can go in and out of the sheds whenever they want, anytime. As you can see, there's all the trees we've got around for them.
Showing me around the field and its open-sided sheds is Ted Hibbert. He oversees the birds for their remaining 5 or so weeks.
It's lovely to see them over there pecking around in the nettles and the grass. Can we go see some?
How yeah, can we get, yeah, yeah, of course place? You can. Yeah, we'll go around here.
So at this point, you must be losing a lot to predators and birds of prey.
Nothing really. We don't get any trouble with foxes because the perimeter of the farm has a fox-proof fence. The hens can be out the whole time and they don't have to worry about anything going to get them.
What about kestrels or
buzzards? We don't really have much of a problem with birds of prey. Ravens can be worse than the birds of prey. Every so often we probably get a few, but with the hens out all the time, yeah, there's not much you can do about it.
At this point, I spot a carcass on the ground, a chicken carcass. The bones have been picked clean.
What's that?
It's a. There'll be a bird of prey, probably.
That'll be a bird of prey.
Yeah.
Okay.
To be absolutely clear, the Daylesford team are not minimising the problem of predators. That's simply a risk you take if your chickens live outdoors. And from a welfare perspective, it's a useful reminder that life isn't without its problems for free-range birds either. Back at the farmyard with site manager John, I want to know if organic chicken farmers are making more money than the ones raising birds indoors that go for just a few quid in the supermarkets.
The margin per bird's probably higher, but you've got to remember we produce a lot less of them. So in this case, we have 55,000 chickens on this farm. An intensive farm may have 350,000 upwards.
Is it only wealthy people who can afford to be moral about meat?
I don't think that's right at all. I think it depends on your perspective and your values. And people can eat well, but can't have everything, you know. And we live in a culture where, you know, buying a £5 coffee is common. I'm almost amazed the amount of people that walk around drinking takeaway coffee. And so it's about priorities.
I've just checked some prices. The average cappuccino from a high street coffee shop is about £4. And if you look online today, I could buy a whole chicken from a major supermarket for £2.88. From the same store, I can buy an organic chicken for £17.35. Expensive, yes, but perhaps not compared to coffee. Quite apart from the fact that we don't have enough space in the world to make all chicken free range, there is a cost to higher welfare. And when it comes to the top tier, I don't believe that everyone can or will pay that. But they might be convinced to spend a bit more for a smaller step up. And history gives us a helpful example, because just over a decade ago, the European Union, then including the UK, did something radical.
On the 1st of January, an EU directive comes into force banning the use of battery.
As a change in European law coming to effect this weekend will make it illegal to keep the birds...
Cost-effective, perhaps, but an EU-wide ban came into force in January.
The EU banned battery cages. Imagine a full-grown egg-laying hen spending its whole life squashed into a small cage with 4 or 5 other birds, each one sitting in a space smaller than an A4 piece of paper. I can totally see why it gripped public imagination when welfare groups started campaigning for change. In fact, although those cages were banned, bigger cages housing colonies of hens are still very much allowed. But that's a whole separate story. So the campaign to get battery cages banned won massive consumer support, and it worked. Cage-free egg sales went through the roof. Until recently, there hasn't really been the same sort of coordinated effort to win shoppers over to higher welfare chicken. But in the last few years, that's changed.
There we go. So I'm currently sat with both of the dogs, but they're very well behaved, so they should keep the noise down. They're both asleep anyway.
Dogs on Zoom seem to be a trend today.
Liam Hodgson is the Global Animal Welfare Specialist for the Humane League, an animal protection group operating around the world. He's particularly focused on poultry because previously he worked for a major chicken producer.
My first introduction to the chicken industry was back in 2018, where I started as a laboratory technician for Moy Park.
Moy Park is one of the biggest chicken producers in the UK. At any given time, it's got around 35 million birds on the ground.
The tipping point was when I went to help with an auditing project on one of the slaughter sites. I was asked if I would step up and be quality manager there. So I had a lot more involvement with the animal welfare and the birds themselves. We would have regular meetings to discuss current welfare of the birds. And we would find continuous patterns, hock burns, pododermatitis, so the ammonia burns on the legs and feet. And that's obviously a reflection of how they were kept on the farm. That doesn't happen at the processing plant. And then I did a poultry welfare officer course, which was a huge eye-opener. And that's when I realised that this industry and what we're doing, it can be done better. There is no reason why it has to continue going how we're doing it. We can improve and we should improve.
And that brings us to the Better Chicken Commitment, a campaign that's backed by around 40 animal protection organisations who are trying to change the law.
The Better Chicken Commitment was created around 2017, and it is a scientifically backed policy that has six different criteria which will address the most severe suffering within chicken production.
The Better Chicken Commitment, or BCC, isn't trying to stop indoor barn systems altogether. Rather, it wants to raise the bar using those criteria Liam mentioned. Things like breed, stocking density, availability of enrichment, and how the birds are killed. Christine Nichols suggested that there hadn't actually been enough studies to conclusively prove a substantial improvement in welfare with slower growing birds.
We have to be very careful that they're not just living a little bit longer, but ending up having the same problems towards the very end of their life. So we need to do fair comparisons. And there haven't been very many studies done.
Of course, even between scientific studies and science-backed campaigns, you do find a difference of opinions. The BCC has managed to get various big-name brands signed up, and a lot of people will welcome this improvement to the basic industrial standards. I can't help thinking, though, that if they pass this law, it might help them sell a lot more chicken. For the campaign to really succeed, it needs supermarket and consumer buy-in as well, because as with the battery eggs revolution, you need the power of the public.
We currently have two retailers, which are Waitrose and M&S.
So two of the UK's premium supermarket brands are on board, but none of the much bigger value brands are. And I asked Liam why he thought they weren't signing up. Is it just about price?
With regards to affordability, the UK government have been speaking about offering subsidies for farms that switch to the BCC. And like with any industry, once the volumes start to increase, then naturally the price will reduce over time. With regards to retailers, they claim to want to give their customers a choice, which is completely fine. But the biggest problem is welfare washing. So one example is one of the retailers on their broiler welfare standards website, whether intentional or not, has a picture of a free-range hen, which to the standard consumer will, of course, influence what they are going to buy. So by not being given all of the information on what it is that they are purchasing, they can't make that informed decision.
It does make me wonder if shoppers like you and me really understand the differences in welfare between all the different kinds of chicken. And if we do want to pay for something different, do we know what to actually look for? We're going to come back to that later in this series. After farm visits and speaking to experts, I've begun to feel much more confident taking care of my own chicken's welfare. Which is why what happens next is such a shock.
You can hear Hey Hey making quite a noise. We've had a vet come out. She's got these very, very deformed feet and legs that are all splayed out, and chickens need to walk around and get food, so she can't access food. So we're hand-feeding her and hand-watering her. The consensus is that this just happens. It may be genetic, and in industry, birds like Hey Hey are just that is factored into the economics, and they are just killed. And unfortunately, I think then that's what we've got to do with hey, he's really suffering. So hey's going to have a very, very, very strong sedative. And I feel much more sad than I thought I would. But this seems like the nicest thing to do.
This is a hard lesson. As they say in farming, if you have livestock, at some point you have dead stock. But it's good that I've learned this now, while I'm still grappling with how we find a balance between what's best for them and what's best for us. After my experience with indoor chickens, I did feel they had a better life than I thought they would. Still, there's something about the sheer scale of the most intensive indoor systems that unsettles me. Even in the best versions of that, where the litter's kept clean and the birds don't appear to have any painful leg problems, are they able to be chickens in the way that mine are? Although free-range chickens have the threat of predators, I think if I'm doing Siobhan Mullen's thought experiment, I'd rather come back as a chicken in the highest welfare system possible. I mean, wouldn't you? But the bottom line is, when we're talking about raising chickens for meat, it does come back to cost. Higher welfare, even across a broiler chicken's short life, does cost more. And we might think we're happy to spend another 50p on a high-welfare chicken sandwich, but would we spend another £2? Or another £5? Every day in all our little food decisions, we're unconsciously balancing welfare, the environment, price, personal ethics. And you might think at this point that knowing more would make my choices easier. In fact, I'm starting to find things much more difficult. Next time, I face another dilemma when I discover that we might have to make a choice between what's good for the chicken and what's good for the planet.
So you can't have it both ways. You can't be producing the kinds of levels of meat that we're eating at the moment and have the kind of meat production system that's good for the environment.
We're in the El Garbia region in Egypt to uncover the hidden side of a trade that feeds one of the richest, most exclusive industries in the world.
The documentary from the BBC World Service brings you award-winning journalism, unheard voices, amazing culture, and global issues.
We try to look at the bigger picture.
Search for The Documentary wherever you get your BBC podcasts.